Mr. Kotelnik will be timing and moderating the section of today's agenda.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, John Kotelnik, staff attorney at the Game Fish and Parks. Today, we have, again, two parts to the hearing. The public hearing, which is the comment on any of the rule finalizations. I have quite a few people signed up for that portion, as well as then once we finish the public hearing portion will be the open forum, and that is your ability to speak to the commission on any topic you choose. As Madam Chair represented, please keep your testimony to 3 minutes. I will give you a 30-second warning or reminder, and then I'll ask you to wrap it up, and I'll probably be more strict this time than in previous commission meetings, because right now we have currently 15 people signed up, so it could get lengthy, so please be mindful of obviously the people's time in the room and then obviously the commissioner's time. So with that being said, the first person I have signed up for the public hearing portion of the meeting is George Vandell.
Welcome, George.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. It's going to be tough to do this in 3 minutes, but we will try. First of all, when it comes to this process, it's important to note that we weren't involved. The Wildlife Federation nor the Waterfowl Association was involved in the process. We find that disappointing. We think this is important enough, the membership that we have. There's over 3,000 in the Wildlife Federation. The Waterfowl Association has over 300. It would have been nice to, had we known, we certainly would have been involved. Second point, this proposal is frankly not liked by either the resident or the non-resident hunters. Perhaps it's a little more obvious about the resident hunters, but even the non-resident hunters, they know they're going to get a permit in 9 out of 10 years, and they know when they come here, they're going to have a quality hunt. Okay, if you look at what has happened throughout North America, those states that have good waterfowl hunting have essentially gone to commercial hunting. Even a state like North Dakota used to be a great state to hunt. Now it's all commercialized. And so it's important to have places where the rank and file, I call them blue-collar hunters, the beginning hunters, they have a place to hunt. And right now they can do that in the state of South Dakota. And we need to maintain those numbers such that we can continue that. South Dakota resident hunters are important, particularly the resident waterfowl hunters. We live in South Dakota. We pay our taxes in South Dakota. We pay our property taxes, our sales taxes, our wheel taxes. We license our boats, our trailers. We make a significant economic impact on the state of South Dakota, far more than a non-resident makes. Trading a resident for a non-resident is not a good trade for the economics of the state of South Dakota. It just isn't. There's far more money spent by resident hunters on their sport 365 days a year than there are by non-residents. Another point, South Dakota is a major duck production state. In other words, we make a major contribution to waterfowl hunters throughout North America. There are ducks raised in South Dakota that we have banded. There are banned returns from Alaska to Central America, okay, from the Pacific coast to the Atlantic coast. We're particularly impacting the Central and the Mississippi flyways with the ducks that are produced here. There's some years that we've bailed out the fall flight for hunters all over the United States. So we make a significant contribution right now to duck hunters everywhere in North America, particularly in the United States. 30 seconds remaining. Just cut me off whenever you want. Okay. We began working with the Game and Fish staff and the commission in 2017 to develop a waterfowl access plan. We think it's critical that the department put together something that has goals and objectives and shows what they intend to do to increase waterfowl access and opportunity. Both of them are tied at the hip. Both of them are very important. What do you want me to do, Madam Chairman?
If you could wrap your thoughts up in about 20 seconds.
I got two more quick thoughts here. Okay. The point is, we think it's important that the staff finalize that plan and bring it to the department. We know there's some good things they're doing, but frankly, I don't know where they are. Hunters don't know where they are. And I think it's important to share this information with the public. Let them take a look at the plan, just like you're doing with the grouse plan and the other plans you've done. They're very well done. They're excellent. let's do this with the waterfall access plan. I'm going to let Mitch talk about giving us the time and opportunity to hunt, or not to hunt, to work with you on development of a plan. I guess, finally, it's 300 permits. It's only 300 permits. Well, I can make that argument, too. Where's the fire? Okay, wouldn't it be better to do this right? Wouldn't it be better to involve the sportsmen of the state of South Dakota and the wildlife groups that they represent into the development of a proposal? We got great ideas. We think it can be done. We just don't think this is the right answer. Thank you.
Very good. And Mitch, if you could just introduce yourself. And
thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Mitch Richter, and I do some contract work with South Dakota Wildlife Federation. I'm here today basically kind of pitch hitting for Megan Howell, who's our executive director and could not be here today. As George said, you know, we're concerned about the 300 licenses, and we realize it's only 300 licenses, but it's sort of a slippery slope argument for us. Once you get the camel's nose under the tent, who knows where that goes from there. And you know, it is in statute. One of the things that I would look at if we wanted to is, you know, maybe we repeal that statute. Maybe we say to go in and amend it that you only do this. This is the first time in 9 years you've done this. Maybe we only do it once every 10 years. Take a look at it rather than possibly this happening every year. But so what we've done is we've put together a resolution that we'd like you to consider. And I'll just read it real quick, and then I'll pass it out to you. But it's a resolution requesting the South Dakota Game Fish and Parks Commission delay the increase of the non-resident waterfowl license proposal. Whereas South Dakota sportsmen and women have an interest in waterfowl hunting, and whereas the South Dakota Game Fish and Parks have a history of working with stakeholder groups on these types of issues, i.e. the residential non-resident opportunity stakeholders group who met and provided suggestions and solutions on big game hunting in South Dakota, and which those recommendations were formalized and adopted in May of 2019. And whereas the Game Fish and Parks need to finalize their draft waterfowl access plan prior to adoption of a new non-resident waterfowl license proposal, and whereas current migration patterns populate the majority of waterfowl in five counties during a three-week migration peak in South Dakota, making access and overcrowding an issue, and whereas South Dakota resident hunters provide increased revenue by way of taxes to the state by purchasing boats, guns, ammunition, hunting supplies, gas, groceries, and maintenance services, and whereas South Dakota Wildlife Federation, South Dakota Waterfowl Association, and other interested stakeholders have members that would be willing to serve and offer suggestions and solutions to waterfowl hunting, therefore, be it resolved by the South Dakota Game Fish and Parks Commission that the non-resident waterfowl license proposal be delayed for 1 year, and the Game Fish and Parks Department be directed to bring forward a waterfowl access plan and work with all interested stakeholder groups on developing recommendations on non-resident waterfowl licenses and bring to the May 2024 commission meeting a proposal. We would, you know, we have a number of members in various groups across the state that would be very interested in serving on this work group to come up with proposals to bring to you. We just don't think that there were enough people involved in this. We're happy to work with guides and outfitters as well. They should be part of the proposal, but we're interested in working with it. We'd like you to vote it down today and direct the department to work with the stakeholder group. Thank you.
All right, thank you both.
Who can I give these to just pass on? Chris, thanks.
Thanks, gentlemen. The next individual I have signed up is Cody Warner. Is Cody online or in the house?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, Cody, I didn't indicate whether or not you were wanting to talk in the public forum regarding the finalization of waterfowl. I assume so because you said you are part of the Waterfowl Association. Is that correct?
Yes, I didn't know what to put there. So
that's
we'll
fine.
We can just go now, and yes, it will be about the 5% increase.
Okay, go ahead, sir. The floor is yours for 3 minutes. Cody, can you hear us?
Yep, I can.
Go ahead. The floor is yours.
All right. Good afternoon, commission members. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you again today. I presented in Brookings, presented some information, which actually Some of the staff did get back to me on a few questions I had, so I appreciate that. I'll just kind of go off the cuff today a little bit. I think I presented what I needed to present in Brookings. I'll just tell you a story. I'm from originally from Southwest Minnesota, moved to South Dakota, and I'll never move back because of our hunting and fishing that we have in South Dakota. My brother has been applying to come hunt with me for roughly 10 years, and he's gotten a license every year. And now he's begun to bring his 13 and 11-year-old boys. We have something really special in South Dakota, and I certainly hope that this is not the start of something bad. I know it's only 300 licenses, but I firmly believe that once we start going down this, that it's going to be a no-return situation. So I just implore you to think about your vote today. Think about what we could lose in South Dakota. We have something very special here. I've hunted in 12 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And there's no place else I'd rather live or travel to hunt ducks and geese. It is extremely special what we have here. We have something really good. I just implore you to think about your vote and how it's going to affect future generations. And with that, like I said, I'd appreciate a no vote on this, on the finalization, and I certainly appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Warner. The next individual I've signed up is Raj Hatling. Raj, are you here or online? We'll come back and check if Mr. Hatling is available after this next speaker. The next individual I have signed up is...
ID followed by pound. Otherwise, just press pound to continue.
That's him there now.
Please enter the meeting password followed by pound.
That's him. That's right.
You have not entered any numbers. Hey. Please re-enter the meeting password followed by pound.
Roger, I think we can hear you. Can you go ahead and try speaking?
You can hear me?
Yes, sir, we can.
Okay. I just have one thing. I remember growing up, my grandfather talking about...
Bye.
I'm gone.
Nope.
You're there.
Or am I still there?
Yes, sir, you're still here.
Okay. I remember my grandfather talking about back in the days when he got home from World War One and hunting and everything. And with this, even with just these few 300 licenses, that's how come non-resident hunting was gotten rid of back in, I think it was 47 or 49, because there wasn't a place anywhere to hunt for the residents. And that's what it's becoming now. And anyway, I just wanted to just say that I wish that you guys, and hope that you think about this very seriously, about even putting 300, because the 300 licenses once, then the next year it's the same thing. And I hadn't noticed this before, but when you move the licenses, the three-day licenses up into the northeast part of South Dakota, why did you put them on public and private land? They were both supposed to be private land only, I thought. That was a question.
Mr. Hatling, the public forum portion is for you to give your side of the of your argument. If the commission, after you give your testimony, wants to ask questions, or if there's follow-up questions regarding issues with staff, they can certainly reach back out to you.
Okay. No, that's fine. That's fine. I just wanted to. I've never done this before with the phone. So anyway, thank you for listening to me, and I hope you give us a no vote at least for right now, and do like George said, and work with everybody on it, not just a few. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hatling. The next individual I have signed up is Jeff Olson.
Thank you. You guys get to hear from me three times today, later tonight, too. Sorry about that. Jeff Olson, I'm here representing the Black Hills Sportsman's Club, one of the many hats I wear. And here I'm today to talk about the process, mainly the petition process or the involvement of our stakeholders. I have, and a little bit of this is a selfish testimony too, but I have 13,824 chances in the elk draw this year for archery elk and H2 for 100 tags, meaning I'll have 24 preferences this year, which I think is the most. So I'm thinking, well, you know, we've been thinking about it for a while, maybe petitioning the commission, coming forward, creating another tier. And then I think, well, we have this process in place. We have this elk working group, stakeholders group that maybe it should be reviewed through first. Because it seems like the petition process, you guys have about 100% kill rate on that. They don't ever seem to pass. So that ties into this non-resident waterfowl issue and the fact that I think just one guy went to the Game and Fish, and here you have a proposal. No stakeholders involvement. Didn't have to come with a petition to the committee or to the commission. So I'm just kind of questioning what is the best process and what's the best way to go about that. I don't know if you've noticed, but in Wyoming and Montana, they've had stakeholder groups addressing this very issue, resident tags versus non-resident tags. And it's been at the legislative level, bills have been passed, it's been at the commission level, and dozens in both states have passed basically to the non-residents are getting limited. The residents are getting more opportunity. And I'm a non-resident, apply for those tags, that's why I know. Last year I drew a moose tag in Wyoming with 24 points. I'm the last non-resident that's going to be allowed to hunt that unit now because of this new law change. So it seems to be a trend around us to do more for the residents and not, and you know, and kind of treat the stakeholders in the state, you know, and I'm not against non-residents or commercial interest, but there is a balance. And this balance has been debated before this commission since the commission started, before time. I mean, this is an old issue, and there's always been a process, and there's been a compromise, and it seems like that process has been skipped now. So I just urge the Black Hills Sportsman's Club would like to put this on hold for a year and get the stakeholders more involved. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. I have no one else signed up to speak on waterfowl hunting season. Is there anyone in the room or online that wishes to give testimony on the finalization of item number 11, waterfowl hunting season?
Nancy Hilding, Prairie Hills Audubon. I'll be very quick. We're doing a Me Too. We would also like you not to approve the, I think it's 300 non-resident licenses. And we're talking about competition for use of the resources. Also think about the resident bird watchers, not just the hunters. Thank you. Hi.
Thank you, Ms. Hilding. Anyone else online or in the room who has not given testimony regarding the finalization of waterfowl hunting season? Hearing none, I do not have anyone signed up to comment on the deer hunting season finalization. Is there anyone in the room or online that wishes to give testimony regarding the finalization of item number 12, the deer hunting seasons? Hearing none, Madam Chair, that would conclude the public hearing portion of our meeting, and with your permission, we'd move into the open forum. So for the open forum, again, same rules apply. Please keep your testimony 3 minutes. I'll give you a 30-second warning and then ask you to wrap it up. We have quite a few people who signed up for the open forum. The first person I have is Catherine Nared.
Thank all of you very, very much. My name is Catherine Mary. And I am here to ask for your help. I'm part of a group called Preserve French Creek. I am an ichthyologist, and what that is, it's a person who studies fish. And I have brook, rainbow, and brown trout in my creek. I have creek chubs, and I also have a little guy called the mountain sucker. When I was going through the report, when they were looking at putting the water, the affluent water, into French Creek, I noticed that that fish was not listed. In fact, actually, a lot of my fish were not listed. So I reached out to my fellow ichthyologists, which I have a list here. And Chelsea Prasberg, she's an aquatic biologist. She's with the South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks. And she says this, that it was recently sampled down by from Bluebell, and this species, the mountain sucker, is a species of greatest conservation need, and it is found within the French Creek. Now, when we got the report from the people who did all the reporting to dump this effluent water, the DANR said it will cause and it will degrade the creek. Now, they did this study 22 miles downstream. Well, the water, the effluent water, is being dumped right below the dam in the 10-mile danger zone where we're going to have problems. The mountain sucker was not on the list. We need to consider that. We need help with that. Currently, the United States is not meeting any of its biodiversity aspects for the creeks, the waterways, the rivers, and it is actually, it was listed in the BBC April 18th, this whole thing on the habitat loss. By not acting now, biodiversity goals and targets will be out of reach. We are dumping this effluent water into a creek which is extremely biodiverse. We have all the crawdads, we have everything depends upon that, and there's a handout that I gave to you. Now, I can only see two options for this. One is return the water to Flynn Creek, but we have spent so much money getting it where it's at. The other option I see is making the water potable. There is a lot of money out there. I would be willing to go through my contacts to get even more money. I think we should maybe put a special levy in place on the tourists that come to town. And that way, keep the creek clean, keep it biodiverse. I, as not a citizen, I'm a citizen of South Dakota. I am a Custer resident, but I'm not in the city. And yes, sir. And I would be willing to do my part and pay more in taxes. I'm willing, and I think everybody else does. Thank you so much. And we all need to do our part to preserve this, and I'm asking for your help. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Catherine. Next individual I have signed up is Jack Winter.
Hi, my name is Jack Winter. I've got the pleasure of, this is the first meeting I've been to, kind of like Jim White. Jim and I were good friends. I'm a property owner along French Creek. My family's owned property there for over 50 years. I'm talking along the same lines of the preserved French Creek. I want to go back in time to 1985. Stockade Lake was cleaned up. It was dredged, drained, cleaned at that time. Probably not many of you knew about that. It was a big job. It stunk really bad. The reason they had to do it was because Custer was draining their sewage into it at that time. Shut them down. Then they put it into Flynn Creek. Been doing that for many years and watered the golf course. Good use of wastewater. Now Custer is planning to drain sewage into French Creek just below the dam of Stockade Lake again. They can't dump it into Stockade Lake because Stockade Lake was said that's off limits. But French Creek's okay now. I'm concerned about my well water. I live approximately 2.5 miles downstream. It's coincidentally right on the Custer State Park border where French Creek goes into Custer State Park. So what's going to be my problem is going to be in Custer State Park too. My property values will no doubt be affected by this And I have something to say. If Custer needs water and they think this water is safe to drink, why can't they pump this sewage into their water supply? There's a vote on June 6th, public vote for to shut this thing down. Thank you.
Thank you. The next individual I have signed up is Neil Schazenbach.
Hello, my name's Neil Schazenbach. I am chairman of this group of Preserve French Creek and French Creek Incorporated. What I have here is some points that our lawyers suggested that we bring to you for your consideration. And I will, like I say, they're abbreviated, so I will leave you a copy of the whole transcript of their words. Game Fish and Parks has a duty to protect Custer State Park. That duty includes protecting game fish waters from refuse and chemicals. The duty stems from South Dakota Codified Law 41-13-1, South Dakota Codified Law 41-13-2, and South Dakota Codified Law 41-17-1.1. Ignoring the dumping of wastewater discharge into French Creek is a violation of Game Fish and Parks duty to the citizenry. A member, and this is point two, a member of our group spoke to former Superintendent Matt Schneider and was told that Game Fish and Parks are not going to stand in the way of Custer trying to get wastewater discharge plan put together. To the contrary, if the discharge plan affects waters within Custer State Parks, the Game Fish and Parks must be involved. There was neither an environmental assessment nor a socioeconomic assessment done to determine the potential effects of this project. What was done was woefully deficient. Given these facts, Game Fish and Parks should have stood in the way. There is a reasonable alternative to dumping wastewater discharge into French Creek. And this is a law that we have discovered. This wasn't from the lawyer. South Dakota Codified Law 34A-10-8 states that you may not pollute natural resources if there is a prudent alternative. There is currently a vote from the citizens of before the citizens of Custer County regarding the city's of Custer's discharge plan. That's from our attorneys. This is two points that I think are very important and I don't think are getting enough consideration. If this water is considered good water, and that's what they keep trying to tell us, then you have to ask yourselves, why can't we put it into Stockade Lake? It was necessary to tunnel underneath French Creek to get the water to the discharge site. Custer was required to lay 3 miles of discharge pipe when French Creek runs reasonably close to the treatment plant, probably within a couple hundred yards. This is an indication of how serious they don't want this water in Stockade Lake.
30 seconds.
Okay, very quickly. Another thing is where the water is discharged into French Creek for a large part of the year, probably starting from late August all the way through to the final melt, that flow in French Creek is very slight, especially up where we are, 2.5 to 3 miles from down that creek. If you, city has a permit to dump 750,000 gallons of water a day. Now, I realize it won't be that much all the time, but that's an awful lot of water going down a dry creek, and this water will be the same kind of water they're not allowing into Stockade Lake. I do thank you for your time. And I will leave complete comments of the attorneys.
The next person I have up is Robert Knox.
Thank you all for listening. My name is Robert Knox. I live on Lower French Creek, just before the second bridge, and I hadn't gotten notice until just now. I don't have any paperwork, but I do think that it's foolish with today, municipalities in that are being more aware of drugs and prescription drugs and cleaning products in water and what that's going to do, and I think it's going to come back and haunt the state. That's all. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you, sir. Tom Conger? Conger, is that correct?
First, thank the commission for the opportunity to appear here. My wife is the owner of the Petty Ranch. If you were aware of property recently in the last few years purchased from the Hill family, you'll find that these lands are to the north of what is now currently owned by Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. I'm not unsure of the name for that land. My situation is that during the 85 fire, most of this country burned, which left the fences in considerable disrepair. And there's also an area, because of the terrain, and if you're at all familiar with that area, you find out it is very rough, that it has never been fenced between what is now Department of Game Fish lands and the Petty Ranch. In the recent years, the commission or the department has opted to lease the grazing on that particular piece of land. My problem is the Petty land is being encroached by both hunters and cattle that are under the governorship of your lessees. Now, there's been a couple of them that were in there. It's quite difficult to maintain an ag operation, as you may well know, with the current tax situation and everything. And we find that your lessees are utilizing land that actually belongs to the Petty Ranch. What I'm seeking is a practical solution to this problem. It may involve several points, fencing, possible land trades, possible additional purchases by the department. I'm seeking a open line of communication of some credibility with the department on this problem. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Jerry Shagla.
Hi, my name is Jerry Shagla. I'm glad to be able to talk to you about some issues in line with what Tom is dealing with. I have not been able to find a clear statement or printed document or any addressing land leases for grazing. I'm a cattle producer. I border the south side of the land he's talking about. I've been trying to figure out how to get a land lease to graze. There is no fence between me and Game, Fish, and Parks either. Past people that have it, the last several years, their cows are down in my pasture, breaking my fences down, and drinking water and eating my feed. I guess I'm asking if there's a printed document or some rules so I can apply for these grazing rights since I joined it all, and what the criteria is. I met several times with GFP people, but they change positions, move up the ladder, or retire. So I haven't got a clear picture of how to do this process. And as you well know, we're in a drought situation and every blade of grass counts. And so I would like to be led to somebody that can help me apply or how I acquire this. And I have, it's my branch is Bent Pine Ranch in Shep's Canyon. I've got several pieces of ground, about 1,000 acres, north and south of the road. So any assistance or any guidance, I'm looking for that.
Thank you, sir. If you stick around, Mike Klasowski is probably the best individual to talk to, so if you want to grab him, he'll find you, and he can probably get you squared away.
All right. Thank you very much.
John Hopple?
Good afternoon, Secretary Roebling, Chairwoman, and Commissioners. My name is John Hopple. I'm the president for the South Dakota Trappers Association, and I got two things I'd like to address with y'all. And I know I got 3 minutes, so I'll try to be quick. So, first one is the beaver issue. I will agree there's less beavers in the Black Hills, and that is because beavers do what beavers do. They build dams on water. There is no water in the Black Hills. Now, there's less beavers there, but if you talk to the fine folks in Rapid City, they're overrun with beavers down there because Rapid Creek has a lot of water. There are beavers everywhere in Rapid City, and they are a nuisance down there. Basically, the beavers in the Black Hills went where the water was. So I am opposed to closing the trapping season that is up there. The trappers that are up there, it's very hard to trap January through March. There's a lot of snow, there's a lot of ice. Most of the roads are blocked, so these guys are snowshoeing in. Any impact these guys have is nothing compared to what landowners who are moving up there in record numbers and the drought has caused up there. There are still lots of beavers. They're just in a different area. They went to where the water is. The second thing I have is I'd like to thank Game Fish and Parks and the commissioners for the partnership we have with you and the South Dakota State University and the ethics program. Our ethics program is really taking notice nationwide, actually. I talked to Catherine this morning. She, again, has more counties requesting the ethics program than she has assets to provide those counties. So it's a very popular tool for the kids out there. Our ethics program is so popular that it was one of the deciding factors in the National Trappers Association choosing Sioux Falls to host the national convention in Sioux Falls in 2024. Other states want to come here and learn what we're doing so they can take that back to their states. Teaching kids ethics and proper way to do things is the way of the future. As we can attest to at our convention last year in winter, when we invited 369 school kids out, and every one of those kids came out and had a blast out there learning about the animals that we have in our state here. Principal Nance is still talking about that, Commissioner Bartling, so he really enjoyed it a lot. The kids are still, they were disappointed we weren't coming back this year, but we go to different towns every year. This year we'll be in Parker, and the dates are September 8th and 9th, and as always, all of you commissioners have an open invitation to attend. We understand trapping is probably one of the least knowledgeable things you guys will actually experience up here. There's so many different factors to it. There's so few of us out there, and we're more than willing to share our knowledge with you guys and help educate you and make your decisions that you make up here a little bit easier. So, does anybody have any questions?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Nancy Hilding.
Each of them. There's a few extra. Okay, Nancy Hilding, I'm speaking both for myself as an individual and Prairie Hills Audubon Society. I'm going to be making 2 points, and I'm sending this out to you. There's a intermittently re-popping up problem with Game Fish and Parks and the comment deadlines. I think there's artificial intelligence or something that cuts the comments off at midnight on Sunday night Central Time. And when, if you read the statute, which I've given you here, it's 72 hours from the start of the hearing. When the hearing is in mountain time, as it is here, that means your cutoff needs to be midnight mountain time, not central time. And sometimes you do it right and sometimes you don't. And this time you didn't include my comments, which were submitted in a timely manner at 11:30-ish on Sunday night. And so I know how to do these things. So, you know, I called or emailed John Katolnik and said my comments had been left out illegally. Could you please add them? And he sent me an email this morning and said that he did. But I know how to do these things. The average people do not know that when you guys automatically treat mountain time like central time. So just work on fixing this. I appreciate very much. You have a wonderful website. You have a wonderful public involvement. You're doing a great job. And this is just another thing you can improve on. And John did, when I asked him to, he did fix it for me. I don't know about all the other people. All right, so now, so thank you for the good stuff that you do. You do a great job. I'm just trying to make you more perfect. Okay, so then I want to talk about otter with the time I have left. You created your first river otter season in 2020 after it became delisted from threatened and endangered. And I think that in 2021 you had a season proposal that on it said that this was just good for 1 year. And I have run through, I could be wrong, but I've run through all of the agendas trying to find the season proposal in 2022 or in 2023. This is a season sheet, and I have not been able to find such. And you still keep having the seasons because the law is still there. And, you know, you haven't changed it. You need a, what? Okay, so in this little sheet that I handed out here, I included excerpts from the otter management plan, these things that you are supposed to be doing for monitoring. What I see, besides not having a season proposal sheet, I do not see reporting on the monitoring. What I see is somebody will give you harvest statistics, which is one of the things this thing asks you to do. Obtain and interpret information on harvested populations. We're getting that. But, you know, maybe I'm missing it and maybe I'm wrong, but I have not seen a recent discussion on the monitoring of otters pursuant to the otter management plan. Okay, so that's it. So thanks for all you do. I would like to know why in the fur bearer there was nothing about otter. Which would include discussing the populations, because you do that
Thank you, Nancy.
When you do a proposal. Can I just drop?
George Vandell, I believe you're going to talk about the farm bill.
Thank you again, Madam Chairman, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. I'll try and be real brief. Please don't start my time here because I need to make a brief observation. It's, you know, I read a survey sometime in South Dakota, 95% of the citizens enjoy wildlife in the state of South Dakota. Now, somebody needs to tell me of another subject that we can get 95% of South Dakotans to agree upon, okay? I don't think we could get them to agree that the Pope is Catholic. Okay, so I just want to applaud the people who have come forward and said something here. I mean, it's really great and terrific, and I guess I thank them and encourage them to keep it up. Okay, real briefly here. I've been digging into the numbers a little bit on the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill is the 800-pound gorilla in the room when it comes to what goes on in wildlife in South Dakota. It is the dominant factor. It is the most important factor of what impacts our wildlife. I often say people spend 95% of the time on 5% of the issue. Well, the Farm Bill is 95% of the issue, okay? There's nothing that's going to happen in Congress or anything else that's going to have a bigger impact than what's happening with the Farm Bill. Right now, we're seeing the Farm Bill decline. Okay, its ability to produce that prime nesting cover for pheasants. And I'm going to concentrate on pheasants because that's where I got the data. That's where I have the information. It's pretty clear in the records that we have and the impacts on the pheasant population. If you look at a graph of the soil bank era and the pheasant population, they go just like this. They follow each other. We hit a high peak during that soil bank era. It went way down. In the mid-70s, we really had a pheasant population that was in trouble. We came about with our pheasant restoration program, and we showed it only hit 20-some thousand acres. It was all funded by the state of South Dakota. But we showed you could make a difference with that dense, secure nesting habitat that was allowed to mature and be there for nesting pheasants. Well, along came the 85 Farm Bill. And lo and behold, those numbers again went way up, almost to record numbers. In fact, there was a period between 2003 and 2010, our statewide pheasant population averaged 9,700,000 pheasants a year. Okay, now we see the loss of that nesting cover. In the current records that I was able to get, the most recent records, the good news is it shows 2.2 million acres of CRP in South Dakota. But when you dig into those numbers, there's only about 600,000 acres of that CRP that's in that good prime nesting cover. Okay, and even that is annually hayed and grazed. They could take a third of it a year. It's never even allowed to develop. It takes 3 years just for that stuff to develop in the good prime nesting cover. And so the existing Farm Bill we have is not that positive for the pheasant population, as well as a host of other species. It's a fawn factory. It's a duck factory. It's a dick thistle factory. It's a short-eared owl factory. There's a whole host of wildlife that really thrives. Our grouse populations increased dramatically during that same population. So I'm not here to do anything other than to make you aware of just how important this is. And for you to make it a topic amongst the commission and the staff. The staff has great people. They know the numbers are there. Just keep it in mind how important that is. Try and have some input because they're working on the Farm Bill as we speak. South Dakota has a major role in the Farm Bill. Dusty Johnson on the House side and Senator Thune on the Senate side are major players in the agriculture. Let them know how this impacts us, please. That's something you can do to really make a difference. And I'll just leave you with this brief paper. It's a page and a half, pretty easy reading, but it tries to emphasize why that nesting cover is so important. How do you tell good nesting cover? Walk 100 yards in it. If you haven't worked up a good sweat, it's not good nesting cover. Okay. And that's the type of stuff we have to have on the ground. We need a minimum of about 1.2 million acres of that. All right. Thank you very much.
David Goodwin.
Hey, good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Secretary Roebling. My name is Dave Goodwin. I'm here today to recap the 2023 mountain lion hunting season. I'm here today representing the Black Hills Mountain Lion Hunters Group, which is a group of nearly 5,000 lion hunter enthusiasts. Each year we host an annual banquet where we educate hunters on the conservation, share tips and tricks on successfully hunting lions here in South Dakota. And through our banquet this year, which was held in March, we had about 150 people in attendance, and we were able to raise about $5,000 that we'll be donating to the South Dakota Youth Hunting Adventures on May 13th at their banquet in Rapid City. Most of you know that we closed out the 2023 season on April 30th, having successfully harvested 44 mountain lions. Here in the Black Hills, I was fortunate enough to harvest my fourth lion this year. Unfortunately, it was the third day of the season, so I didn't get a lot of hunting in. We'd like to express our appreciation and gratitude to the Commission and the Department for a well-run mountain lion season. There's no greater feeling than calling in or tracking down one of these majestic animals in the beautiful Black Hills here in South Dakota. And it's actually becoming quite rare across the country that there's a opportunity that anybody with a deer rifle can go out and hunt one of these awesome animals. And so in most states, you have to hire a guide or an outfitter and go behind hounds to successfully harvest a lion. So we'd like to encourage the commission to continue with the current lion season structure going forward. And we appreciate all you do. Thank you for your time. Thank you for all you do for South Dakota.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else in the room who has not already given testimony in the open forum wishing to give testimony? And could you just identify yourself, state your name and where you're from, please, sir?
Jim Lentz, Custer County Commission.
Morning, Madam Chair. I sent you a letter a couple months ago and tried to explain the situation Custer County is in. We have a couple issues going. One is we're running out of volunteers. And one of the reasons we're running out of volunteers is the demand that the increased population has developed. Custer Fire Department went on 2 calls a day last summer. That's a total volunteer department. Hermosa went to a paid department 5 or 6 years ago because we were having too many calls, and ended up, I was going on all the calls as a medic, and I went on 125 calls the last year I did it all the time before they went with the district. Now they went on 350 calls. They have 4 people now, a man in Keystone and Hermosa. It's been very successful, but guess what the cost is? $550,000 was their budget this last year. You folks are paying $8,000 for Custer. You know, that's embarrassing. And the same thing goes with law enforcement. We just contracted with the city of Hermosa for law enforcement. They're paying us $80,000 for a deputy. You folks are paying Custer County $8,000 for a deputy. Hermosa has 500 people. We supply services for over 2 million people in the summertime for Custer State Park. I think there's a discrepancy there. I'm not even asking for what the average taxpayer in Custer County pays. I'm just asking for a realistic view of what our costs are. It's not the cost of individual calls. It's the cost of keeping a department together 24 hours a day, whether it be law enforcement or fire. And that cost is increased all the time. So, and I'm here to ask you a little bit. Custer now is going to form a fire district the same as Hermosa did, because the Hermosa district's been very successful, but at a cost. And Custer's going to have to go with a fire district because they've run out of volunteers. So I would ask that the commission work with Custer. We've hired a guy to form the fire district and become part of that fire district as a taxpayer would be, because we're going to have additional costs. We have to have a full-time fire department. And it's beyond our taxpayers' ability. Now, we're just asking Custer State Park to contribute what a normal taxpayer would contribute. Thank you for your time. You bet.
Is there anyone else in the room who has not already given testimony in the open forum that wishes to do so? Is there anyone online who has not given testimony in the open forum that wishes to do so? Hearing and seeing none, Madam Chair, that would conclude the open forum portion of the meeting.
All right. Thank you.